But, you know, for the average user, we know they're using about 800 megabytes. So that's what we're trying to do is, you know, get them to innovate and help people save money. And it's going to be people walking into cell phone stores, being educated and saying, you know what? I know I don't use a gigabyte. Why don't you guys offer something that's a smaller plan?
The CUM analysis applies to customers of AT&T, Sprint, and Verizon. The analysis showed smartphone owners in Champaign overpaid $9 million per year, while those in Decatur spent $8.2 million for excessive data packages they didn't need. More information is online at citizensutilityboard.org. I'm Jeff Bossert, Illinois Public Media News.
WILL programming is made possible by Country Financial Representative Scott Jackson, Village at the Crossing in Champaign, helping provide retirement solutions for U of I faculty, staff, and employees for over 20 years. Country Financial can provide a wide range of products and services for immediate insurance needs to retirement goals. Online at scottjacksonfinancial.com.
It's 12:38. Mostly sunny skies were seen across central and southeast Illinois through the morning hours. Temperatures across the area at 10 this morning were in the 70s. They range from 72 at Galesburg to 79 at Olney. Scattered thunderstorms will develop this afternoon, mainly east of the Mississippi River. Some storms may be strong to severe, with the main threats being large hail and damaging winds. A trend otherwise towards cooler and less humid weather is expected over the Midwest for a few days. High pressure over the Great Lakes in control. Late in the week, warmer and more humid weather will begin to spread back into the region. Scattered storms will again be possible by Thursday in areas west of the Mississippi. High temperatures range from the lower 70s across northern Wisconsin today to the mid-80s. In southeast Missouri and southern Illinois, low temperatures tonight, they'll range from the low to mid-60s. However, northern Wisconsin will be in the mid-40s. Increasing clouds this afternoon, scattered showers possible, the high around 82 degrees, winds up to 15 miles an hour. Mostly clear skies tonight, the low around 58. Sunny skies tomorrow with a high of 78 degrees. Mostly clear Wednesday evening with a low of 62. Mostly sunny skies Thursday with a high of 82 degrees. Thursday night and Friday, partly cloudy skies, the low around 65, the high around 88 degrees. And Friday night through Monday, partly cloudy skies expected, the low around 72 with a high up to 90 degrees. Right now, temperatures around the area, we've got 81 in Bloomington. At Willard Airport, we have 83 degrees, 82 in Danville and Decatur, and in Friends Plaza in Urbana, 82 degrees.
Support for WILL comes from World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods on the corner of 6th and University in Champaign, providing Champaign-Urbana with a wide array of foods from around the world, including cheeses, olives, spices, hot sauces, olive oils, and more. World Harvest invites you to join them in supporting public radio.
It's 12:40. The Illinois EPA just renewed the water pollutant permit for a coal mine near Industry in western Illinois. This happened even though the mine is known to have violated that same permit more than 600 times. What did these violations do to the ecosystem where they were dumped? In part two of a series, Illinois Public Radio's James Needham explains why that question might not be so simple.
The Illinois EPA just renewed the water pollution permit for a coal mining company that's known to have violated the same permit over 600 times in the past. But what did those violations do to the ecosystem where they were dumped? The permit, called an NPDES permit, specifies the site in Industry, Illinois is only allowed to pollute nearby waterways so much. Instead, they polluted a lot. Many of their 600 violations in recent years have been for high levels of heavy metals found in the site's runoff. Nearby resident Kim Sedgwick has been watching the site for years. In fact, she sparked the investigation that led to the discovery that the company had a very shaky compliance record. It wasn't a surprise to Sedgwick. She said she had been seeing physical signs for years.
There have been times when the water had, you know, the strange look to it and strange smell to it and things of that sort.
Aside from changing the way the water looked and smelled, what exactly did the mine runoff do to the ecosystem? The truth is, nobody knows. And that's the thing. The law doesn't require anyone to know. The mining company's job ends when the water exits the plant, and the EPA only requires them to test the water, called effluent, just before it enters the stream. Brian Purbix works for the Prairie Rivers Network. His group was part of the suit that uncovered the 600 violations. He's become well-versed in coal mining pollution laws, and he says this is an area of the law that falls through the cracks.
It's one of these things where, you know, you might think that our state regulations require that kind of thing, but unfortunately they don't.
When effluent is tested, the water is supposed to meet standards set for things like pH, heavy metals, and total suspended solids. But what are the ecological consequences when those standards aren't followed over 600 times? Tim Spear is a fisheries biologist at Western Illinois University. He says there's no clear-cut answer.
Can you specifically say that the high iron levels are going to do this, or high manganese levels are going to do this? It's tough. It depends upon water chemistry, it depends upon what's there, it depends upon the oxygen, it depends upon the temperature.
Here's what we do know. In Illinois drinking water, only 1 milligram per liter of iron is allowed. The levels found exiting the industry mine, almost 30. Manganese, only 0.15 milligrams per liter are allowed. Exiting the mine, over 50. Spear says levels like that could affect a wide range of organisms that are pretty important.
I think most of the organisms that will be affected by the kind of things you're showing me would be stuff that people don't really think about much, but it's the microorganisms, the bacteria, the fungi, the algae, mussels, insects, other invertebrates, all that stuff that people don't think about very much, but super important to the aquatic ecosystem, right? Sure. Without the algae, without the bacteria, without the inverts, you can't have a functioning aquatic ecosystem. Right, yeah.
There isn't any definitive evidence of what the pollution did to the microbes in the water. There is some evidence that it may have affected fish. In 1998, before the mine was in operation, the Illinois Department of Natural Resources conducted a fish study on Grindstone Creek, the stream the polluted water exits into. A stream's index of biological integrity, or IBI, represents the health of a stream. The higher the number, the less disturbed a stream is by humans. From 1998 to 2002, the IBI on Grindstone Creek dropped from a perfect score of 50 down to 34, a rating of fair. But it's not clear if the drop was due to the mine's activity. Because of water conditions, Doug Carney, who studied the stream for the DNR, had to use different sampling equipment in 2002 than he did in 1998. It's not clear whether the drop in IBI was due to the mining runoff or just a change in sampling method. The owners of the mine near industry are working with the Illinois DNR to build another mine. This time they want to build it near Canton Lake, a source of drinking water for a large part of Fulton County. The permit was partially denied, but Sedgwick says that Fulton County residents aren't out of the water yet.
That's not the end. The mine will come back and appeal and modify their permit, and it will start all over.
I'm James Needham.
It's 12:45. The Arab Spring countries are still in the process of remaking themselves. Consider Libya, where militia fighters continue to roam the streets, yet a new private radio station does not hesitate to criticize the armed groups. NPR's Leila Fadl has more.
Good morning, Tripoli, says Bassem Aradi as he greets his radio audience. On his daily show, he says pretty much whatever's on his mind, unafraid of militiamen, government officials, or his boss at Radio Zone, who sits nearby quietly laughing as Aradi makes fun of a bunch of Congress members who were caught with whiskey and women the night before. Quite a scandal in this conservative nation. Bassem uses the colloquial Libyan dialect instead of the formal Arabic typically used in television and radio newscasts. It's as if he's talking to a friend, and he invites his listeners to call in and voice their opinions. But his work is about more than informing the public, he says.
My name is Bassam. I'm working in Radio Zone. I'm living in Sarraj. I'm doing this for Libya, for my people. So if anybody have any problems with me, please, he's more than welcome.
Bassem says he wants people to know that there's no reason to be afraid, to speak out about the problems in Libya and against violence. He names names and doesn't worry about the fallout. The owners of Radio Zone are no strangers to threats. One of them, Nabila Shabani, has been kidnapped twice for criticizing armed groups. It's incidents like his kidnappings that give this new station a cause, Nabil says, to make sure his kids' generation doesn't think that guns are the answer.
All what I want for this generation and the next generation.
Radio Zone is only about a year old. The studios are still being built. The staff members, mostly 20-somethings, broadcast in one room while construction goes on in the other. A young tattooed composer sits in the offices downstairs putting together tracks. He goes by the stage name Pixie, and he's working on a new song that uses gangster rap to rap against what he sees as the gangster behavior of Libya's militias. The lyrics were written for his musical partner, Yusuf Shabani, the son of one of Radio Zone's owners. Yusuf, just 13, shot to fame during Libya's revolution with this song. "We want the darkness to go away," he sings, "and justice to prevail." Those lyrics were written by Yusuf's father, who says they still hold true today.
"We need the life as a human being."
The co-owner of Radio Zone, Ali Al-Abad, is in charge of the music side of things. He's working on bringing Libyan artists with a social message to the station. It's music, he says, that will lure young people rather than lectures about gun control and violence.
"We're presenting especially Libyan music, but Libyan music in a modern way. Actually, when you hit a message to any generation, young generation, you have to hit it by the way they like to satisfy and receive your message in a clear way."
He and the young composer Pixie got together after the revolution. Pixie had worked with international hip-hop stars in Turkey, where he grew up. Now he's home, hoping to make a mark in his own nation. Ali Al-Abad, the co-owner of Radio Zone, says in many ways Libya is a mess. But despite all the difficulties, Libyans now have the right to speak freely.
"Before, we were controlled, but now we can do whatever we want."
Leila Faldin, NPR News.
Support for WILL comes from Stuart Peterson, Pioneer Seeds, Standard Grain, Cornerstone Building Products, and Risk Management Commodities. Thanks to these businesses for their support of WILL agricultural programs.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 18th of June, 2013. It's the birthday of musician-songwriter Paul McCartney, born in Liverpool, England, 1942. When he was 14 and learning to play a left-handed guitar, he met a local art student named John Lennon. They formed a skiffle band, called themselves the Quarrymen, and played for years in a little club in Liverpool called the Cavern. After a little success, they met Brian Epstein, who became their manager. He suggested they replace their current drummer, a guy by the name of Pete Best, with a young man named Ringo Starr. By 1963, the band, which had changed its name to The Beatles, was the most popular rock and roll group in England. In February of 1964, they took America by storm with the appearance on The Ed Sullivan Show. The Guinness Book of World Records lists McCartney as the best-selling composer in popular music history. His song, Yesterday, is the most recorded ever, with 2,200 versions. On this day in 1815, Napoleon Bonaparte lost his final major battle near Waterloo Village in Belgium. One of the most famous figures in history, remembered by his first name only, Napoleon is the subject of some 45,000 books. Waterloo was Napoleon's attempt at a comeback. He had been defeated by the British and was in exile on the island of Elba, but he grew restless and devised a plan to march north with his army and attack the English and Prussian armies. A heavy rain fell, delayed the attack, allowing the Prussians to bring in reinforcements. Napoleon's army was soundly defeated. Thousands of fatalities resulted. He abdicated and went to live on the island of St. Helena off the coast of Africa. The word Waterloo came to mean an impossible struggle or decisive and final defeat. It's the birthday of novelist Amy Bloom, born in New York City, 1953. She was in her 30s practicing psychotherapy, raising two children, when she realized she wanted to be a serious writer. She said, "I've spent a lot of time listening to people, and I am endlessly intrigued by relationships, particularly by the gap between what people say and what they truly feel, and the gap between what they do and what they really want." Her books include Love Invents Us, Away, and Where the God of Love Hangs Out. And here's a poem by Thomas Lux, "To Help the Monkey Cross the River." To help the monkey cross the river, which he must cross by swimming for fruits and nuts, to help him, I sit with my rifle on a platform high in a tree, same side of the river as the hungry monkey. How does this assist him? When he swims for it, I look first upriver. Predators move faster with the current than against it. If a crocodile is aimed from upriver to eat the monkey, and an anaconda from downriver burns with the same ambition, I do the math, algebra, angles, rate of monkey, croc, and snake speed, and if it looks as though the anaconda or the croc will reach the monkey before he attains the river's far bank, I raise my rifle and fire 1, 2, 3, even 4 times into the river just behind the monkey to hurry him up a little. Shoot the snake? The crocodile? They're just doing their jobs. But the monkey has little hands like a child's, and the smart ones in a cage